Hello and welcome to Radio Contra, the podcast of American Partisan. I'm NC Scout coming to you live from the G Camp in rural northern North Carolina. Welcome to episode 6.
Howdy.
Name's Josie Wales.
I've heard of that name. Some said you'd be headed this way. And they said a man could get rich on reward money if he could kill you.
Seems like he was looking to gain some money here.
Actually, I was looking to gain an edge. I thought you might be someone who would sneak up behind me with a gun.
Where'd you ever get an idea like that? Besides, it ain't supposed to be easy to sneak up behind an Indian.
I'm an Indian, all right. But here in the nation, they call us the civilized tribe. They call us civilized because we're easy to sneak up on. White men have been sneaking up on us for years.
Cherokee, huh?
Yeah. They sneaked up on us and they told us we wouldn't be happy here. They said we would be happier in the nations. So they took away our land and sent us here. I have a fine woman and 2 sons, but they all died on the Trail of Tears. And now the white man is sneaking up on me again.
From one of the greatest movies of all time, Outlaw Josie Wales. And I think it's very prescient for today. Talking about Richmond, what many are claiming to be a great victory for firearms rights. Many are running around out there talking about how good things were, how civilized it all was, how civil. So, first things first, we're very thankful for myself as well as the rest of the staff here at American Partisan. We are extremely thankful and grateful for the fact that there wasn't violence. However, that said, there's a number of problems with what occurred. First and foremost, what are you going to do when those laws pass anyway? Are you going to stand around? Are you going to make some signs? Are you going to put on your plate carrier and your rucksack and follow a radio show host around in an MRAP? Is that what you're going to do? Are you going to get into your designated protest cage? So, it was said, go out there anyway, thumb your nose at a tyrant. And I will pose this question yet again. What was the tangible goal? I've posed this question 4 times now. I have yet to receive any answer. What was the tangible goal? You see, this protest is not only about firearms rights. And if you think that it's about firearms rights, then allow me to educate you. It's about putting the brakes on the destruction of civilization. It's about standing up and saying no. This is not right. This is not normal. These things that we know to be caustic to civilization, to order, to normalcy, to decency, to goodness. We want to put the brakes on that which we recognize is destroying the fabric of our society. Firearms rights are only the latest thing that the left seeks to destroy. It's as much a symbol of them of destroying the traditional order and values of the United States as it is merely disarming you. Do you really think that they're going to disarm? Do you really think that the leftists out there plan on disarming? They already don't follow the law. I received a number of emails from folks both here in the United States as well as a few abroad that said, wow, that was so good. Such a good thing. And when I pointed out the fact that, to the contrary, behaving so civilized, what's going to happen when they pass those laws anyway? So I think that we can all agree that we live inside of that Overton window, that the narrative, the goalposts, continues to shift, and we continue a leftward shift in America. We have open communists running for president and taken seriously. And although we had 22,000 folks, which I'm proud of that. I am proud of that. Well, we had 22,000 people out there that stood around and did little while proclaiming to do much. And I know that that may not be a popular opinion. So be it. You have erased any energy from your base. A protest served as nothing more than a blow-off valve for yourselves. Those laws are still going to pass. And right now, while you are basking in the great feeling of I did something, you lost any and all initiative. The governor of Virginia has no intention of listening to you. The representatives of Virginia in the legislature have zero intent of listening to you. They believe they have a mandate, and they're going to act on it. And then you'll dare stand up and say, well, we'll fight this in the courts, and it'll go nowhere because the court system doesn't work either, folks. It's broke. It's broken. But someone else will stand up. I've got an organization. Of course you do. Right. But I did something, right? And I saw a number of the critiques that were thrown our way simply for the fact that my friend and fellow author, Matt Bracken, warned of what was planned. And as we saw on Thursday, and many of you have already forgotten, that it was indeed planned. Three so-called white nationalists, one of them Canadian, AWOL from the Canadian military, caught with some explosives. If you can believe that, not so certain I do. But that's what the narrative is, right? So let's talk about what this served for the government. Every MC number, which is attached to your cell phone, was collected out there. There was a lot of images of this on social media. Oh, look, they set their own cell phone towers up. Yep, those are stingrays, folks. They collected every MC number. They got every bit of that social media mining data off of you. And facial recognition software was in use. But hey, let's celebrate the fact that they were polite. Am I right? They were so polite. So there was an arrest made. This young lady looked like she probably could have belonged to an Antifa cell, but who really knows? Michaela E. Beschler, she was arrested for wearing a mask. Now, there were other masked folks out there, but what it was she was probably caught somewhere near one of the facial recognition devices, and they picked her up. And wearing a mask is indeed a felony there. So, we know that facial recognition software was in use. So, let's talk about what they're going to do with all of that. Right now, as we speak, the analysts that were supervising this event and collecting the data are now mapping the mid-level leadership. All right. Not the folks who were at the very top of the hierarchy. The guy that's in charge of the VCDL and, you know, the people who were out there speaking, they're not really concerned with them. They're going to go after the mid-level organizers because these people, the mid-level managers, are the real keys to making things work in an effective resistance model. And let me remind you that one of those laws that they have proposed and will pass is a red flag law. They're looking for ways to go after those guys. There is no ACLU to save them. There is no army of lawyers to bail them out. There's going to be red flags called, and there's going to be very little media presence. Once that media luster fades individually, they're going to be targeted. So, you need to take care of yourself. And, you know, I tell you this not as, you know, hey, I'm going to be patronizing. I'm telling you this because I was the one that used to do this. I know exactly how they operate. So take that as a warning. And I'll leave you with this quote. According to the Libertas Institute, the courts approve 98% of all search warrants. Most warrants are approved in less than 3 minutes. On 5 November 2018, a red flag law order was executed on Gary J. Willis, age 61, of Ferndale, Maryland, at 5:17 a.m. Minutes later, he was dead. Don't let that be you. There's a fight coming, and I'm going to ask you again, what are you going to do when they pass those laws? What are you ready to do when they pass those laws? Are you going to be standing around holding signs talking about how civilized you are? I'd like to know. All right, a word from our sponsor, ammo.com. It's as good a time now as any to pick up a lot of ammo. Because the battle lines are drawn, folks. Those battle lines are drawn. Click on the link in the sidebar. Get $15 off your first order of $200 or more. And tell them the NC Scout over at American Partisan sent you there. That is ammo.com. I get a number of emails, and the response to this podcast has been really just awesome. I didn't expect that we would receive as much positive traffic from it as we have, but you know, I'm honored by that. And I think that it speaks volumes for our audience. So I get a few emails that are asking very specific questions, and one of the things that I plan on doing in the future is addressing those questions in the podcast individually. I've got one that asks multi-tiered questions, a little bit about combo and a little bit about ARs, and I thought that it would be really good to talk about. So here goes. Hey, brother. Your podcast has been fantastic so far. I think I've listened to episode 3 or 4 times. I keep picking up tidbits or finding something to share with my training partners. Need you to schedule a scout class in or closer to Missouri, maybe Western Tennessee or something. Hey man, we can absolutely do that. For all of you listening out there, to schedule a class, and I would love to train with as many people as possible. Shoot me an email and we'll talk about the requirements for that. But I get back to his email. I also loved your comments regarding shooting through brush instead of an open range. In these Missouri River hills, you'll rarely get more than a 100-yard shot unless you get some elevation above the ground cover. Your comments about AR setup were pretty useful getting some guys to reconsider their AR setups. You know, I don't think I've ever heard anyone really make a distinction between a close quarter battle, home defense oriented AR setup, and a patrol field use AR. Amazing work and the kind of stuff that sets you head and shoulders above many of the feel good square range instructors, especially in the AR field. Hey, thanks, man. I wouldn't say that I'm head and shoulders above anybody. I'm just a guy. I have a slightly different thought on training methodology, but you know, thanks, man. I really appreciate the comment. Getting back to the rest of the email. Quick question: if you had to set up within 500 yards of a target and obtain hits, what special considerations do you need to take before you pull the trigger? As far as the hindsight goes. Specifically concerning the bad guys reacting in a typical Death Blossom. Do you fire once and scoot, sneak away, or hunker in place and avoid incoming fire? Also, on the radio front, have you messed with JS Call for any low-power, poor-propagation digital comms? Seems to be pretty darn effective so far. I see a lot of potential for abbreviated message formats, since you can send a message to a call sign's inbox without them being there. 15 seconds of transmit with very low power seems like a good method. Do you get the message out with a high probability of success? Take care, brother. Keep up the good work. Also, I hate the message of Rage Against the Machine, but their song Guerrilla Radio should be your podcast intro. Thanks, Golf Tango. Yeah, so about Rage Against the Machine, they, believe it or not, they've been one of my favorite bands since I was a kid. And, you know, while I agree with you on the message, I don't get my political opinions from entertainers. So, yeah, I include in the intro songs from artists that are typically underground. And the songs themselves have a specific meaning to me or a significance. And, you know, I like doing different things. I like doing different things. I like mixing stuff up, man. But I included Guerrilla Radio just for you, brother. So let's get on to your questions. And I really appreciate all the kind words. Talking about AR setups. So let's get into that, because that's really the most complicated question out there. When it comes to the AR-15, there's really three distinct categories of weapon setup. The first one is a hunting rifle. Using the AR as a hunting weapon, you know, it's becoming increasingly popular for that these days. It makes for a really good optics platform if you're running thermal. As well as night vision, lasers, all that good stuff, for hog eradication as well as coyote eradication. And, you know, if you live somewhere where there's a lot of groundhogs, we do out here, and prairie dogs further out west, like Oklahoma, northern Texas, and Nebraska, you got prairie dogs out there. The AR is really good for that. For that type of setup, yeah, you're looking at longer range, more precise shots. That's where your bull barrels are going to come in handy. Typically, with those guys, they're going to have a barrel twist that is catered to a very specific ammo type. Typically, you'll see 1 in 8, which is a good middle of the road. You can run heavier, the heavier ammo, up to 77-80 grain, but you know, that's kind of in a category all its own, right? Then we'll talk about your close quarter battle style weapon. You know, what I prefer to call a everyday mobility or everyday carry weapon, as well as a home defense weapon. And what I mean by everyday carry or everyday mobility, I don't mean, you know, I'm walking around with the AR-15 on my chest, you know, at the low ready everywhere I go. I mean, let's just get real here. That's not what we're saying at all. But I do have one in my truck. What I've been using here for the past several months now is a 10.5-inch barreled Palmetto State pistol. Look, this thing's been absolutely flawless, you know, and it's not an expensive weapon. I think the retail form is like $519 or so. And I've been doing a long-term review on this one, so I've been just beating the crap out of it. Running all kinds of different ammo through it. Running it hard, going longer than normal between cleanings. And this thing is flawless. I've yet to have a malfunction with it. But those shorter AR pistols, they're kind of in the vein of the Mark 18, and you know, Mark 18, so you know, just shy of an 11-inch barrel. The thing is really good out to 200 meters. You know, you could run it further than that, I'm sure, but with the ammo selection that I prefer for personal defense, which is of Barnes ammo, typically in the heavier category, you know, the 77 grain. You know, it needs velocity to be able to expand. And Barnes says that it will expand down to 2,100 feet per second. You know, and with the 5.56, the shorter in barrel you go, the more velocity you're going to lose. But even with that 10.5-inch barrel out to 200 meters, you're going to be just fine. You know, with a barrel that short, you're not really going to be taking shots much further than that. But what I will say about you out in Missouri, as well as us here in North Carolina, a 200-meter shot is actually a pretty long range for where we are and for many parts of North Carolina. Because we've got dense woods where I am. We have a mix of deciduous and conifer forests. And, you know, where we do have a lot of deforestation that happens. And what comes in behind that is typically replanting in Virginia pine or white pine. And, you know, there's about a 10-foot spread between those trees. And that is where they replant them. And if they don't, it's just going to grow back up in scrub or whatever. So we'll have, you know, what I call underbrush or cutover brush. And you've got those tight shots, you know, so an AR pistol is actually pretty useful in all that. And it's very rare that you'll get a shot out here for more than 200 meters. So it works pretty well and it's fast handling. It's light. I've got mine topped with the Primary Arms Cyclops 1X. You know, I don't have to worry about a battery failing in that thing. I mean, it does have a battery. It's got an illuminated reticle, but it's got a black reticle that's etched in there as well. You know, and I do have a minor astigmatism in my eyes. So a red dot, like an aim point or even an EOTech, kind of gets a little fuzzy, especially at night for me. And, you know, that Cyclops does not. So it's something to think about. The other thing that I will say about everyday carry, everyday mobility weapon that's in my truck, obviously you need a sling. And I use the same sling on all of the weapons that I have. I really, really like Sergeant Major Lamb, Kyle Lamb behind Viking Tactics or VTAC, his VTAC sling. I picked up my first one off of a shop on Yadkin Road right outside of Fort Bragg a little over a decade ago. And took it to Afghanistan with me. I've beat the living tar out of that thing. And I've still got it on my primary weapon that I use all the time. The thing's flawless. I mean, it's heavy-duty stitching. I think when I bought it was like $40 or something. And I think that's what they still go for today. It's money well spent. You know, it's a sling that I can adjust the tension on it, tighten it down to my body as need be. And it's a 2-point sling. It's nice and simple, nothing complicated about it. And it has yet to fail me. So I've got one of those on all my weapons. The other thing that I'll say is for a CQB carbine or CQB AR, you absolutely need a light. And I use a Surefire G2. I've had this Surefire G2 since my first tour in Iraq. It's got a little push button on the back of it. You know, it's showing its age. Is it the greatest thing in the world? Are there better lights out there? Heck yeah, there are. But I've been using this thing for so doggone long that it just works. And, you know, it's like an old Sooner dog you can't get rid of. The thing just works. So, you know, I strongly recommend having one of those. And I've got a M-Lock mount that it sits in. It's made by Odinworks. And it's a offset mount. Keeps everything light, tight, streamlined to the weapon. You know, it doesn't get hung up on anything. When I've got it on my body, everything is nice and streamlined. You know, that's really what you need to be looking for. I mean, with an AR, you don't need to make things complicated. You don't have to have a big bunch of crap on it. You know, ambidextrous this and that and the other and, you know, fancy charging handle and all this stuff. I mean, man, my weapons, I keep them as close to stock as possible, with the exception of, you know, having that free-floating handguard. That Accurized handguard. I don't think in 2020 that there is a reason not to do that. I don't see a valid reason for having you know, the two-piece handguard in 2020. I mean, I think we've, the AR platform has advanced past that. And if you like your handguard, you can keep your handguard. But, you know, I prefer to have mine free-floating. If you need to have flip-up irons, you know, put those on there. I personally don't. You know, and that's, if you disagree with that, that's fine. But I make sure that the mounts for my optics are rugged enough to withstand anything I need to do. And, you know, I just look at it as extra stuff that's on there. But, you know, that said, keep your everyday carry, your everyday mobility weapon simple. You know, don't add a bunch of junk to it. And what I'll say with that, too, is get out and train with it. If you're declaring, you know, you buy an AR pistol or even an AR rifle and say, you know, this is my home defense weapon, run it through some scenarios. You know, run it through a home invasion scenario. Do that. You don't have to have some fancy trainer, you know, with you while you're running through it. Just run it through it and see how it works. Look at where the flaws are in your setup. You know, I'm constantly making minor adjustments to stuff with every training evolution. You know, nobody's weapon setup should be static, as in, you know, this is just what it is and this is the only way I'm going to do it ever. You know, you have to innovate with stuff, and sometimes when new products come out, makes life just a little bit easier. You know, definitely look at them, but you know, you need to be training with it. Moving on, the final setup that I'll talk about is a patrolling setup, more for, you know, general purpose use. You know, I'm walking out into the bush with you know, my team of Bubbas, and we're alone and unafraid and all that jazz. If I'm out patrolling, I'm going to be running a, you know, 14.5-inch to a 16-inch upper. I've got one from Palmetto State. It's got the FN cold hammer forged barrel on it and pinned and welded flash hider and all that good stuff. And I got an ACOG on top of it. But for all intents and purposes, it's set up very similar to my home defense or my everyday mobility, close quarter battle, whatever you want to call it, AR pistol. That way, if I pick up either weapon, I have that familiarity. I have that sameness across the weapons. And even on my SPR, the BCM SPR that I have with a Geissele rail, it's basically the same. There's not a whole lot of difference there between the handling of the weapons. I don't have any, you know, fancy shortcuts and controls, you know, no mag pull bad lever, none of that stuff. It's just real simple. Very simple. The placement of the accessories, if I got a light on there, it's going to be in the same place. That way my hands instinctually know where everything on my weapon is going to be, you know, and with my SPR setup that I'll be carrying for a very deliberate role, support by fire, because the role of a designated marksman is support by fire. And I talk about that more in the scout class, but, you know, that one includes a Harris bipod out there on the end. Harris bipod is just a good thing to have. I mean, are there newer bipods on the market? Yeah. Are there better bipods on the market? I'm not really sure. I know that the Harris bipod works. I've used it on a number of different weapons platforms over the years. It has never failed me, so I don't see any reason to change it. It's not heavy. They're made out of aluminum, and they work. As far as if I'm going to be an assaulter in that team, if I'm going to be the guy that's, you know, doing the flanking and, you know, really getting up close and personal with the bad guys, you know, that 14.5-inch is really good. That inch and a half cut off the barrel may not seem like much, but when you get to carrying it in the woods, it actually makes a pretty good difference, especially when you're talking about quick handling, maneuvering it in the underbrush and making some of those tight shots. And, you know, I don't think that you're going to see a ton of difference between 14.5 inches to 16 inches in practical terms. If we're looking at raw data as far as bullet velocities go, you know, you're going to have a difference there. But in realistic terms, you know, not so much. The other thing that I'll say about a patrolling AR is that you, if you've got a light on there for home defense, if I'm going out to, you know, wreak havoc, let slip the dogs of war and all that good stuff, I'm probably taking that light off. If the only exception I'll make to that is if I'm going in and deliberately clearing buildings or doing something like that. But if I'm snooping and pooping in the woods, I'm taking that light off. That way I don't AD or accidentally discharge the light while I'm on patrol, and then, you know, get all my buddies spotted and then get a shot up. That wouldn't be good. And the other thing that I'll say is you definitely want to look for a mid-length gas system. Why a mid-length gas system versus a carbine gas system? Well, a mid-length gas system is a healthy compromise between the rifle length and the carbine length. The AR-15 by design is a direct impingement weapon. And that means it's blowing gas and everything back into the bolt to make everything work. You know, that's how the whole bolt cycling is initiated. And you're going to get a lot of carbon fouling and everything else. If you have that little bit of extra space for the mid-length system, it's going to cause it to run slower as well as a little bit cooler. Those gases have a little bit of extra time to cool down as they are going back into the action. So what that helps us do is it lessens the recoil impulse as well as keeps the bolt just a little bit cooler. It also helps if you're firing suppressed too. If you're firing suppressed with a carbine length gas system, it's not the most pleasant experience in the world. And, you know, a mid-length is just a little bit better. You know, optimal for the AR-15 is that rifle length, but we don't really carry full-length rifles anymore. You know, I know there's the Marine Corps still does the M16A4, but I don't see a whole lot of use to be carrying a full 20-inch AR-15 out there these days. I just don't. You know, throw all the hate you want at me, but I just don't see the point. Let's talk about barrel twist. I prefer, like I said about the pistol, 1-in-7 twist barrel. 1-in-8 is okay. I know the original SPR, a special purpose rifle, ran a 1-in-8 twist to stabilize heavier bullets, and it's kind of a middle of the road. A lot of your older commercial AR-15s will have a 1-in-9 twist. What you really want is a 1-in-7. I've got a load that I use with 77 grain ammo, where I'm using a 1-in-7 twist barrel, and I get sub MOA groups all day. You know, they're well stabilized out to 500 meters, which is honestly longer than necessary. So yeah, that 1-in-7 twist barrel is really what you're looking for. And again, 1-in-8 is okay, but it can be, depending on the barrel manufacturer, it can be a little finicky here and there on ammo. But typically, 1-in-7 is going to be pretty standard across the board. Finally, I'd like to talk about optics. You know, on my 14.5-inch Palmetto State upper that's got the FN barrel, I've got my tried and true, had the absolute crap beat out of it. It's been blown up with me in an IED, and I've shared that story with some folks in class. But you know, I've still got it. I'm still running it, but it's one of the old school TA-01 4x32 ACOGs. It's rugged, it's simple, and it works. You know, it's there's nothing fancy to it. It works. All right. ACOGs are bomb proof. They're top notch. Are there things with better glass quality? Are there more modern stuff out there? Sure. But it works. And that's really, if you're looking for one of the most rugged optics out there, that ACOG is going to do you well. On the other side of the fence, on the SPR, I've got a low power variable optic, or a LPVO. And, you know, the science behind low power variables has just blown up since, you know, 20 years ago when I think Millett came out with one of the first ones with the DMR1, you know, and they had the old donut of death, the donut and the dot reticle. And I think Burris followed them with some stuff, and then Loophole jumped on the bandwagon and whatnot. But really that market has shown its utility in combat. As well as in the competitive circles, low power variable is just really good. You know, and I'm running a primary arms 1-8x24. I've talked about that a lot. I'm super happy with it. Just a really good optic to have. Are there better ones on the market? Yeah, absolutely. But that 1-8x24 has served me very well, served folks very well in class. And I think that it'll serve you really well too, coming from primary arms. But that low power variable is really good because you crank the power back and you've got all the advantages of a red dot, and you crank the power up, and now I've got the advantages of proper shot placement. I can self-spot. I know where the dope is on my rifle or data on previous engagement. You know, I can see all of those things. I can PID or positively identify my target. And, you know, I can pick out all of those things, all those little things on my observation missions that I wouldn't be able to do with a red dot or something that's set up more for speed rather than precision. You know, and again, it's just my thoughts on things. You know, I've got a lot of friends that swear by EOTechs. They love them. I've got friends that are running Aimpoint with magnifiers, and they love those too. And I'm not knocking them. I'm not knocking that at all. If you're running that and it works for you, beautiful. You know, keep it up. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, this is what works for me based on my experience. And, you know, it is what it is. It's just one guy's opinion. You know, and mine is certainly not the only one. And those friends that are running red dots, you know, they've got just as much combat experience as I do, and in some cases more. The last thing that I'll say is setting up your weapon for task and purpose. You know, if my mission is law enforcement mission, which, you know, it's not going to be because I'm not in law enforcement, but in case you are, you have a different set of mission parameters than a guy who's, you know, moving in the woods on a defensive patrol for homestead or setting up for a surveillance mission or whatnot. It's a different mission set. You know, so you need to sit back and really pick out what is it that I'm going to do with this weapon, and then go from there. Last, I want to talk a little bit about commo and address your communications question. Talking about JS8 call. I've got some experience with FT8 and FT8 call, and I haven't had time to play around with JS8. But this stuff is really good on HF, man. It's really cool what Joe Taylor is doing with his software and the constant updates that are out there, and a lot of really cool stuff is being done. As any ham will be able to tell you, that's played around with HF in the past couple of years, we're approaching a solar minimum, and I'll talk more about that in a dedicated episode on HF. But you know, voice is just not really getting it on HF. It's just not. And in fact, in the last RTO course, it was kind of frustrating. Because when I was demonstrating HF and the techniques behind HF for groups, we weren't able to accomplish everything that I wanted to do with HF because of the very difficult band conditions. But JS8, it's a digital mode that allows you to send short messages, and it works pretty well. It is optimized for bad band conditions, and so that's why it is got the level of popularity that it has. You know, but again, keep in mind, you know, you're sending very short messages. FT8's very short. It's good for a quick contact, but there are definitely things that you can do with it. It definitely has some utility. One of my favorite digital modes out there, and a lot of folks know this, have been in class with me over HF, is PSK-31. PSK-31 is very robust. It's very simple, and you know, it's not the flavor of the month anymore necessarily, but it works. Contestia is really good as well. MT-63 over HF and its narrow banded modes has some really cool things that you can do as well. You know, so don't necessarily get hung up on the flavor of the month this month. But with that said, JS8 call offers some cool capabilities. You know, and again, I'm very familiar with FT8, not so much JS8, but, you know, just because of my own time constraints. But I do look forward to working with it. You know, folks, that's pretty much all I've got. I'd like to give a shout out to Bob Griswold over at Ready Made Resources. There was a news story that popped up over the weekend. I was out doing some training down in the Deep South in an undisclosed location in Georgia. And there was a few folks from American Partisan down there, and we were just tearing it up, having a good time. Got a lot of training goals accomplished, and it was brought to my attention that you know, Bob Griswold, a guy that I've come to know and call a friend, was raided by the FBI. That isn't what happened at all. I called him immediately and talked to him. It's a classic example of a story getting blown out of proportion. He did receive an order for 70 units from a government entity for night vision equipment. But that is not a raid. TMVC, which is another company out there that sells night vision, got a similar large order, as have other folks. You know, and folks, you need to know that this is the end of the year. This is when a lot of what we used to call use or lose budget needed to be spent. You had money, you had grant money for these units and these different agencies that has to get spent in their budget, or that money does not get approved again. And so because it's coming up on the end of their year, that's what's really going on. So for all the tinfoil outlets out there that were spinning it a certain way, that's not what happened. It is what it is. But Ready Made Resources, awesome company. And we've actually got a class that we're putting together out there in the beginning of May, Signals Intelligence course. Originally, we're going to do RTO course, but it was a little too close to the one that I'm doing in April here in North Carolina. By his request and some of the other people that were going to come out, we changed it over to the Signals Intelligence class. And it is going to be in Tennessee. Look forward to everybody that is coming out there. We're going to have an awesome time. And, you know, you're going to get a lot of hands-on on doing practical intelligence work when it comes to collecting signals on the ground. You know, I've got a couple of RTO courses coming up on the calendar. I've got one in April that is just about full. I've got the readout communications course, which is RTO, advanced RTO, and signals intelligence all together. That class is full in June. I added a second date that will be in September. I've got another one coming up in Wisconsin in the Madison area. So if you are in the heartland of the U.S., you guys up in the central northern part of the United States, I'm going to be in your area. And I've added a few other classes to the fall. We're putting together the fall training calendar right now. Typically, I will schedule open enrollment classes once all the requests for private classes have been filled. That's just how it goes. And I added a Kalashnikov class because I've had a number of people asking for it. So if you want to get some good training on how to run an AK in a practical environment, hit me up on that. Got some firearms classes that we will be adding to the calendar as well as the RTO course, signals intelligence course, advanced RTO, all those other classes that everybody knows and loves. And again, folks, we are ecstatic that the turnout at the Richmond rally was good and that it went off peacefully. But you cannot lose sight of the fact that there is some serious stuff coming down the pipe. This thing served as a blow-off valve, and there's a lot of people that went home, and they're going to get into a false sense of security that, oh, we did something today. Well, you know, you listen to some people talk, just like you're listening to me talk. It's what you do with it. They showed up, they were peaceful, but it fell on deaf ears at the end of the day. What are you going to do? They're still going to pass the laws. They're still going to do what they're going to do. Get yourself ready. God bless. Until next time, NC Scout, out.